Hey guys, and welcome to the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, presented by Great Days Outdoors Magazine. The first podcast to bring you the local fishing report for Alabama's lakes and rivers, whether it's good, bad, or ugly. I'm your host, Nick Williams, and this week's show is brought to you by... Alrighty guys, welcome back to another week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report. Past 2 weeks, we've been doing some special topics. We've been talking about the proposed changes to the regulations for the black bass up on the Coosa Reservoir. Hope y'all found that educational, if not entertaining at least. And if that's an issue that you feel like you need to keep abreast of and you missed it, definitely be sure to check out the past 2 weeks episodes. Make sure that you're an informed and educated outdoorsman. But we're going to be getting back to the basics this week, back to our regularly scheduled fishing reports. And to help us out with that, first up, we got Alex Davis reporting live on the water from up on the Tennessee River system. Alex, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's a little chilly this morning, but I'm out here and I'm loving every minute of it.
I know you got to get them thick overalls up there where you're at. I know even down here on the coast, man, I woke up this morning and went downstairs and had to turn on my little office heater down here in the basement. It's brisk up here. I got this row of windows facing the lake, and man, when it gets cold and that north wind hits them single pane windows, it's just rough down here in the office basement.
It was 23 up this morning. So yeah, I really don't know what I was thinking by doing this. I just thought, well, it's not going to get no warmer and they're not going to catch themselves sitting at the house.
That is true. It's a lot easier to catch fish if you're getting a hook wet. Well, talk to me a little bit. What weather aside, are the fish biting up there?
Well, you know, last time we talked, it was 100 fish days, and it was in the grass, and you know, it was a guide dream pretty much. And since then, a lot has happened. The shad has pretty much abandoned the grass. And that happens kind of every year, but usually they just go to a little bit deeper grass. You can find it out there on the river channel, and you can kind of pick up where you left off with the shallower stuff. And this year, that has really not seemed to be the case. It seems like most of the shad has now went completely deep. They're just kind of roaming, almost being like pelagic. And that is where forward-facing sonar has really kind of come into play. You know, forward facing is obviously, I got one right now. Forward facing has always been a big thing, a player. But as anglers, we kind of always knew at Gunnersville that these fish did something. We just didn't really know what they did. And now with forward facing, we can figure out that these fish they virtually just follow the shad all winter. And you know, every year that happens. But as fishermen, we never really knew where they went. We just kind of always said, they went out there somewhere, and now forward facing, we can find them, and you can pretty much track them down. You can catch them. I'm not going to say it will. It still is tough. It's not easy to do it. You know, there is an art to it. So for anyone thinking that it's cheating, I would say it's not cheating. I'm trying to unhook one right now. Live update.
I know. That's you can't. Hey, folks, you can't get any more up to date than that right now. So.
Yeah, I'm actually on the lake right now unhooking one. So it's not cheating as far as like, this isn't easy. There's an extreme art to this, but it definitely opens up venues that we never had before. You know, we knew that they went somewhere out in the middle and we knew they was on bait. You know, back in the day, I've watched videos from West Point and stuff, and you know, guys are, you can just be so much more efficient because you just don't like try to find dad on your sonar and just start jigging a spoon up and down. I mean, actually now you're looking where there's the shad, there's six in the bait ball, and I'm throwing right to them. So, you know, it's a controversial topic. I hear it a lot and I see both sides of it, but as an angler, I like to catch fish, and used to in December and January, I'd kind of stay inside and do honeydews and watch fishing on TV. And now with this technology, you can actually get out here and really enjoy it. And like, as a crappie fisherman, I mean, it's a crappie fisherman's best friend.
Yeah. I know I don't have forward facing sonar yet. I'm behind the curve. I finally last year picked up side scan for my little fishing boat, but I feel like for me, The equivalent is this is the first year I've ran cellular trail cameras. And, it's like you said, like you talk about how with forward facing sonar, you always had a suspicion what fish were doing. And then you get the sonar and you see it real time. Same thing with trail cameras. Like I always had a feel for what deer were doing. But then when you can just sit there and have an image sent to your phone every time something triggers that camera, it's definitely different. I have to say it hasn't killed any deer for me. Like you said, you still have to know how to use the tool. And then, once you get more effective with it, I think what's going to be interesting to see in the next few years is how do we equalize and make sure that folks aren't burning up the resource. I feel like it's a good tool. You should use it, but if you're catching more fish with it, just take the onus should be on the angler to just make sure that he's not, wearing out his local honey hole, so to speak, with the new technology. I feel like if everybody can just kind of keep that in mind, you'll get the best of both worlds. You'll get to use the tool and the fishing will stay good.
And I think that's about the best analogy is, now you can, I'm not going to say you can track deer, but you can see how deer move. You can see how they move. Like with trail cameras, you can see, oh, they're using this piece of the property during this time and this piece of the property during this time. I feel like this is where they go to bed. You can learn more about them, which is going to make you more efficient as a hunter. And this is the same thing with fishing is, now you can learn so much and you can figure out what they're doing, which will help you catch more fish. I mean, and that's the name of the game. That's why we all come out here. So to me, I like the technology because I can actually, I get to learn more about fish. I catch more fish, catch bigger fish. So I don't really see a whole lot of bad to it. Now there is the depleting the resource, which obviously that's a topic, and I'm sure the states are looking into it going forward, and we just kind of have to trust the state what they figure out about it. If they see that things are going downhill, then it'll be up to them to say, oh, and they'll put the kibosh on it, which will be fine.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting to hear Damon back a couple of weeks ago talk about how, they had to go kind of back to zero, figuring out some management strategies because a lot of the regulations that we have were set up, back at a time when people caught fish to eat fish. And then that just kind of went obsolete. Like talking with Damon, he's like, yeah, people don't keep fish anymore. He's like, you have a 10 fish a day limit technically. He said, but he said, very, very few people are going to catch, keep, and fry 10 black bass. He said, but the catch rates have gone up and the bigger fish are getting caught over and over is what their data was showing, at least on the Coosa Lake. So it'll be interesting to see if that results in any changes. I know some states, do stuff like shut down fishing during the spawn or have, actual fishing seasons like they have hunting seasons, right? Which makes sense. You think about it, you don't shoot deer 365 days a year, but you fish 365 days a year. And I can see, just personal spitball, and I can see something like that being implemented in the future where, maybe the state decides, all right, we got to give them a break. Same thing that they're doing with like flounder down here. It's interesting to speculate about what it'll look like in 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, and like and kind of to your point, we never had this many tournaments. Tournament fishing has kind of really exploded in the last few years as far as how many people are tournament fishing now. So, that's a big thing of, how do you regulate? We have more tournaments than we've ever had. People might not be keeping fish, but we're having these tournaments. And, that kind of all goes back to what are we going to do with forward facing? What are we going to do with tournaments? And I'm glad I'm not the state, and I'm glad I don't have to come up with these things because they got a lot on their plate right now.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a that's the type of job where it doesn't matter what you decide, you're gonna have somebody unhappy that wants to give you a call, send you an email, and let you know all about it. So I'm with you. I definitely don't envy that position. So it's
yeah, I'm glad I'm not Damon right now because he's got a lot of things he has to figure out, and it's all new, and you can't really use data from 20 years ago because, like, with forward facing sonar, how much we're learning about things as the week goes by virtually, you have to come up with new rules and regulations and different things as lures come out and technology comes out. I mean, like the Alabama rig, when it come out, it kind of took the fishing world by storm, and some states came in and said, you could use it, but you only could have 3 hooks, and other states said, well, you can pretty much do what you want. So it'll be a interesting time right now for fishing.
It's crazy too, like not just in fishing, but in hunting. Like we've watched, like you said, tournaments got more popular. I noticed here in my neck of the woods, hunter participation really at least seemed to increase when you had the pandemic. More people had time on their hands. I know I went more when we went from having to commute every day to working here at the home office. Like I was able to hit the woods more. And I know they've had the, you know, they've started looking at changes in turkey regulations, and it's not just the changes in how the resource is being used, but like that part can kind of be a little discouraging and worry you a little bit when you look at, you know, more people on less land, basically, is the way that the trend has been going. But then what's cool on the flip side is you look at the new technology and you look at the new research they can do. And it's like with turkeys, they've got new machinery where they can, you know, basically put a device out in the woods that listens for turkey gobbles all season and make decisions based off of that. You know, have somebody out in the woods the whole season listening to every bird that gobbles. You look at deer surveys that they do, like collar tracking surveys that MSU's doing, some of the tagging studies that they're doing with fish. So that's the good news. That's the cool part. And that does sound fun. Some of the field biologists I've talked to who are going out there and just keeping tabs on, you know, animals in a way that's just never been done before. That's fascinating to me. So hopefully they can keep up. That data helps them keep up with the changes and the trends over time.
Yeah, and like I said, I'm a turkey hunter as well, and I know with more people turkey hunting, you know, something probably should be done with the limits of how many you can keep or how many you can kill, because, you know, you don't call turkeys. When you shoot one, the damage has been done to the population. So the states, I think they're doing as good as they can, and an influx of people with COVID and, you know, people just getting more into the outdoors, they're learning as much as we're learning every day at this point.
For sure. Well, talk to me a little bit. It seems like winter's finally here. You said that y'all were hitting 20 degrees up there where you're at. What's the winter pattern going to look like over the next couple of weeks as we come up on the holidays?
So as of now, you know, it's the forward-facing sonar, open water, jigging spoon, Alabama rig, jerk bait, the jig head minnow obviously is a very popular technique. I'm sure the grass fishing will get better because usually every year it gets better at some point in time this time of year, and it's usually the deepest grass you can find near deep water. So you want it kind of like near the river channel. So you want deep grass near deep water in that 10 to 12 foot range, and that's going to become a player. And that's Alabama rig and jerk bait. So usually the lures are kind of the same: Alabama rig, jerk bait, single swim bait. You know, they just anything mimicking a shad, they're feeding on shad heavily. So that's what you want to match right now. It'd be a couple months before we start with those, you know, the black and blue or the reds, you know, the crawfish colors. So as of right now, it's kind of all shad imitators.
I got you. Well, it's what's your best tips out there on a 20-degree day? I know we talked about this some last year, but it can be. I struggle with cold water fishing just because, man, like a hot biscuit and a hot cup of coffee sounds like a better idea sometimes when you step out the door, go to hook the boat up. What's your best tips for staying out there when it's this cold?
To me, it's having good clothes. You need a good pair of gloves. I think that's probably the most important thing that I've ever found is just having good gloves that you can stay warm in and you can fish in. I use these little, like, they're like mechanic gloves. They're really small, so they're not cumbersome. I can still fish in them because I can't fish with something that's huge on me. And these little mechanics gloves are real nice. They're thin, but I still feel like I can fish, feel everything, but they still keep me warm. But I would say a good pair of gloves is probably the most crucial item while fishing when it's cold. That and a nice suit. I wear an insulated suit. It's almost like for snowmobiling, and it just keeps me real warm all day. So that's the stuff you need. You got to have it.
I like it. When you say mechanics glove, are you talking about like the automotive, like mechanics spelled with the X at the end, just regular old?
They're called high flex gloves. They have like a grippy material on the bottom, and they're kind of like see-through mesh on the top. And
Yeah.
surprisingly, they're really warm. I don't really need anything else. I can just pretty much just use these, and it's I've used them for a few years. My uncle is a car mechanic, and he has to work on cars out in the cold. And he pretty much told me, he said, if you don't have these, you don't know what you're missing. So ever since I went to these, I can honestly say it's really helped my fishing out in the winter just because my hands don't get cold. I, once your hands get cold, you're doomed at that point.
For sure. Yeah. It's I struggle tying knots as it is. And once you start to lose dexterity in your fingers, that's the end of the road for me. Well, Alex, I know you out there, you're on the water, you catching fish. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I'd hate to be responsible if you missed one. So we'll let you go, but we always appreciate you contributing.
Well, I appreciate it. Go stay warm. Go catch some fish.
That's it. And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by... Alrighty, guys, welcome back. This time we're coming in from Lake Eufaula with old Groz. Groz, what you been up to? You have a good Thanksgiving?
Yeah, my belly's still full, recuperating from all the turkey. And oh, man, I tell you what. I don't know why I just always overeat during Thanksgiving. I swear.
I overindulged, and then I gave myself a few days. I burned a lot of it off duck hunting and behaved myself for a little bit. And then this morning I got up, and I don't know why, but I had it in my head I wanted to make drop biscuits. And then it turned into making, I don't know if you ever went to Red Lobster and you had their Cheddar Bay biscuits, but I took that drop biscuit recipe and I added some garlic and I added a little bit of shredded cheddar cheese, and then I brushed a little butter on them and put a little parsley and a little sea salt on top of them. And next thing you know, somehow I'd done about a pound of dough cooked up into cheddar biscuits. So I did all my good that I, all my calories that I burned tromping the swamp. I just, all that's a loss. Now I'm going to have to go do it again.
I hear you, Chief.
That's it. Well, what's been going on up there on Lake Eufaula?
Well, I tell you, we finally got the water in the high 50s. You know, it's been hanging around low 60s, but now with these cold nights, it's getting, you know, it's down in 30s now at night, and the water's in the 50s, and so the fish are really moving around. They're headed back in the creeks. The main thing is it's unseasonably high as far as the lake level. So that kind of changes things. Normally, the water's down this time of year about a foot or so. So it's changing where some of these fish are at, and it makes for a more suspended, you know, bass situation. So it could be a tough day if you don't know what you're doing or you're just fishing memories. Because I mean, you know, you got to fish the hand that's dealt you, kind of thing. So the water's slightly stained, way up river. You know, we hadn't had a lot of rain, and I guess it's partly because they're, you know, drawing the other lakes down above Eufaula is the reason why it's up. But the fish are being caught. Last week, some fish was caught on buzzbait, actually. So that's interesting. That's something that you know, you don't hear that much about on Eufaula, but talked to a few people. I'm not really a buzzbait fan, but I talked to some people that's caught some fish on buzzbait. Of course, the crankbait's in play, spinnerbait's in play, and certainly a jig. Jig and pig is really good this time of year, so...
I like what you said there about it's hard if you're fishing memories. I think me and you've talked about that a couple times before in the past about the getting a theory in your head and working off of memories and theories versus working on real-time information with what fish are doing right now. I like that.
Well, and that's really not just on Eufaula. It could be on any lake. If you have changing conditions, you've got to change with it. I mean, if what you're doing is not, you know, working, you got to figure it out. And, you know, with the water coming up, the fish are moving shallower in places. You know, there's always going to be a ledge bite on the lake. I don't care how high the water gets, but usually when the water comes up, you better be looking at the bank sometime during the day. The chatterbait's been, I've been hearing some stuff about chatterbaits being real good also in some of the shallower water. Swim jigs in play also. So, I mean, if you're doing the shallow thing, certainly the chatterbait and swim jig is working too.
I like it. What you'd mentioned to me that you'd been fishing a little bit on Lake Martin. How's that watershed looking right now?
Yeah, I've been fishing the OGS over there, and Martin is really a fantastic lake, especially this time of year when they draw it down, and it's in one time it was the largest man-made lake, I think, east of the Mississippi. It used to be, and people don't realize that lake was impounded in 1926, I believe. That's when it was backed up. That's how old that lake is. I believe it's the oldest lake, you know, in the state of Alabama. But it's just a fun lake to fish, and it's taken 13 pounds. One week it took 14 pounds to win their tournaments over there. Of course, you know, you got to weigh in a big, you got to have some big spots or a big largemouth, and then have some good spots to go with it to win the tournament. But we've done pretty good over there. We fished like three of their deals, and we've been catching them on jig and pig, shaky head, drop shot, and we've been throwing an A rig and a jerk bait also. So we've kind of mix it up, see what they want.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're for it as cold as it is, doesn't sound like that's really hurt the fishing any. Sounds like you're getting on them on Eufaula and Lake Martin. Sounds like they're hitting a wide variety of baits, so that's always good. I know you talked about this time of the year they dropped the water level down. We was on a little Airbnb this past weekend, and we were catching a few off the dock, but you could definitely tell they dropped that water level, and it was a little rough if you was stuck on the bank there trying to reach out there and get to where there's actually some water. But you know, we were catching fish, you know, and we were catching them up shallow in the backwaters where you wouldn't necessarily think you'd be catching them. They were still in the middle of the afternoon when the sun warmed up. You know, there was some small schools of bass, kind of like little wolf packs, kind of cruising the edge of the shallows. So there's a lot of fish in there, and it's you mentioned it to earlier that it got impounded in 26 and that it was the oldest lake in Alabama. And so I did a quick Google search, and apparently in 26, when they impounded it, according to Wikipedia, at least, Lake Martin was the largest man-made body of water in the world. So that's kind of cool.
It's like, you can almost break it down. Most people break it down into two sections. You got the, you know, and it's basically the Tallapoosa River backed up is what it is. But
right.
You've got the main lake, you know, from, say, Wind Creek down to, say, Blue Creek. And then from Blue Creek, you slide over to Kalijah. And then Kalijah's basically another section of the lake. It's like a lake in itself. You know, it's just a very diverse lake. And, you know, the main thing about Martin is you want to be, because anybody can go there and catch five fish. It's just, you want to figure out where the bigger spots are, because most times what we do is we try and catch five and catch the biggest spots. And then we go for a largemouth bite. And occasionally we'll catch a largemouth, you know, while we're fishing for the bigger spots, but that's the main thing. And it's, that lake can be a really good lake when you have foul weather over the years. You know, if it's like raining a little bit, windy, whatever, not maybe the perfect ideal day to go fishing, that lake can really show out. I mean, I'm not really sure why, but it just has over the years. I mean, a little wind on the lake, you know, because Martin's a lot clearer than, say, Eufaula. Eufaula's got, you know, right now it's kind of a golden color, but Martin is, you know, it's one of the clearest lakes that you can fish, you know, around here.
Yeah, Lake Martin is definitely a clear lake, and I know it's, you talk about it being diverse and having the different kind of sections to it, and I know it's, what I always enjoy about going up there is you get They dam the Tallapoosa and you get far enough upstream and you just get on the Tallapoosa, and it's a fast, relatively fast moving for down here, rocky river. You take a canoe or a float tube down it, and that's just there's a lot happening right there in that little neck of the woods. You're right there at the fall line, so, and you're not that far, if you're on Lake Martin, you're not that far off like the Alabama River. A lot of water, a lot of different types of water. There's really something for everybody up there. So
Yeah, and then of course in the summertime when they bring it up full pool, I mean it's really, it's a fun lake to be on too, if you're just boating and stuff like that. The fishing gets kind of tough in the summertime. Most times they have tournaments like at night and stuff, and then your Thursday night tournaments and stuff like that. But this time of year, October, November, December, January is really fun time. Lake Martin really is. And what's interesting about that lake is, as old as it is, there's still a lot of natural wood that's still in that lake. It's amazing. And as much as they take it down every fall and winter and then come back up, there's still some wood that the fish relate to on the lake. Of course, there's man-made stuff, brush piles and stuff like that, but I'm just talking about just the natural wood that's still there. It's amazing.
so that's a good transition talking about. I've been up there and I've fished a little bit, and usually when I go with a buddy and we're using his boat, and I've never done a lot of riding up there and scouting. I've done it here in my neck of the woods, just ride around with side scan and kind of map out some of the little lakes we have down here and get a feel for them. But you talk about there being a lot of natural wood on there, and that's not something you're going to know unless you got your sonar set up right. And you've been telling me that with your ranger in the shop, you've been taking clients out a lot and using their boats, which is something you haven't done in the past, and talking about helping people setting up their sonar. And that's something that I don't have a lot of confidence in. I've tweaked mine and got a little bit more comfortable with it over the years, but just in your experience in the past few weeks, getting out on other people's boats, what's been your thoughts on how their sonar is set up? People on average doing a good job, bad job, got room for improvement?
Yeah, I mean, when they would call, for a trip, sometimes they'd ask me, said, "Well, can you go in my boat? I need some help with electronics." And I would usually say no. I mean, I can show you what to do in my boat because, I've got all my waypoints and what I'm trying to do. Because I certainly want to do the put them on fish and entertain them and try and, help them be a better fisherman. But with the experience lately that I've had being in other people's boats, it's amazing. It's amazing how many of the clients, because I get in their boats and they have the same electronics that I have sometimes, and they don't have them adjusted properly. And so I'm sitting here going, I show them what. Where they went wrong on their adjustments, and I tweak their units and stuff up front on the console, show them what they really need to be looking for, certain circumstances, how a hard spot looks on, say, side scan where it gets brighter, and then we distinguish really what they're looking at, which that's one of the things that I would say, "Well, there's a fish right there. Do you see what I'm looking at here? Those are fish." And they say, "Well, those are fish." And so they really don't know. And so there's just a big market for helping people out with their electronics. And so if somebody calls next time, I'm gonna entertain the idea of helping them because there's so many people out there. I'm not saying that all the people that I've been with here lately, that their units weren't set up. But I would say 75% of them were not set up properly. And it's amazing. And it's gotta help them if they can get their units dialed in properly. And the best way to do it is to go out on the water and do it for them. I mean, you can tweak some of their stuff, like in the shop or on land, but when you go out on the water, they can visualize the fish, see what's going on, and system. So if anybody out there that's listening needs help with their electronic, I'd be glad to help them with it. It's opened my mind. I didn't realize how many people really don't know the whole gist of the electronics that they're using.
So kind of walk me through, if you can. And I assume it's kind of like troubleshooting, like engine problems, right? So like if you're having trouble with your boat motor, like you start with the little things, like, well, is it vented? You know, like is the choke on? Like, and then you move through, like, is it getting spark? And is it getting fuel? So I guess like if you're looking at somebody's sonar unit for the first time, you hop on their boat and you turn on the screen, are you starting, like, what's the first thing that you look for to tell you if a sonar's set up right? Like, are you looking for fish? Are you looking to see what their bottom return looks like? Or
right. Well, first thing I'm going to do if I'm getting in somebody's boat is I'm going to do a walk around. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do, I want to look at what they have up front on their trolling motor. Okay. And then I'm going to go around, you know, to the big motor, and I'm going to look up underneath there, and I want to see where their transducer's mounted, how it's mounted, where it's mounted. You know, there could be an installation problem where maybe they tried it themselves and didn't want to, you know, pay somebody to do it that knows what they're doing, and they have a bad install on a transducer. Well, that can affect the whole experience, you know, inside the boat, because everything you're looking at, you know, is based on how that transducer's mounted. For example, I was doing a side scan on a customer, and I noticed before I got in the boat, I said, you know what? I didn't come out and say it right then, but I knew that when I was getting in the boat, I needed to check this out. And come to find out, what I thought was going to be the case was the case. He had a blockage on one of the sides of the side scan. In other words, there was something in the transducer's way on, say, the right side. The left side was okay. And as soon as I got in there and put it on both left and right, that was first thing out of his mouth was, hey, you know, why am I getting this dark shadow on the right? And I told him, I said, well, it's your transducer installation. You've got it's blocked by this other transducer. Anyway, it had a blockage. Okay. Something was bad. It could have been his power poles or something. I don't know. I can't remember exactly. But what happened was it just, you know, and then there's not much I could do there. But then, I don't stop there. I go into the regular 200 megahertz, which is certainly in play when it's cold, and also down scan, just your down scan return. But, you know, a lot of people will keep it on down scan this time of year. You know, when it gets cold, you need to be using your regular traditional sonar, 200 or 220. Some of the brands work on 220, but 200 is certainly, because it's going to show you more bait balls and more information than, say, a down scan. Now, it's okay to do both. You know, you can have one on down scan and one on traditional. But in the wintertime, I always would switch to traditional.
So what are you looking for from once you get to where you've kind of verified that the transducer's set up properly? What tells you when you're looking at the screen that you're getting a good return and that your electronics are set up properly as far as like what you can control on the screen?
Right. And it, you know, if you're talking about, say, Lowrance, for example, and Hummingbird, Garmin, they all have the most of their controls. You have to know where they're at. Some of them are a little more complicated as far as where they're at. But that's the first thing I do when I get in the boat. If I'm driving their boat, for example, most times I'll drive their boat. And so I'm looking at their console unit and I'm dialing it in and explaining to them what I'm doing. You know, a lot of them won't have their sensitivity turned up too high. That's always, it seems like they don't have it up too high. And some customers will have their sensitivity turned up too much, and you'll have to back it down. So it's just a, you know, you just each situation is different. And when I'm doing it, I don't just do it. I tell them what I'm doing and what I'm looking for. Because, I mean, you know, if you turn up your sensitivity too high, you're going to get a lot of interference most times. And so you want to have a little interference, but you don't want just a clean slate either, you know, where you don't see hardly anything. And you'll see this fish every once in a while. You know, I like to get it right there. As a matter of fact, I'll turn it up till I'm getting a whole bunch of interference, and then that's when I'll decrease it, the sensitivity. And you know, once you get it set right, most times you don't have to set it up or mess with it. And sometimes you can take it off the auto mode. You know, all the manufacturers have auto mode, and sometimes it's better to take it off auto mode and do it manually for that day. For example, if you're just fishing, say, 20 to 25 foot, most times, you know, that you know you're on a particular lake, and you may want to just put your depth, your lower depth, maybe on 30, you know what I mean? Instead of putting on auto where it's bouncing around, going from 40, you know, to 20, you're better off just to leave it on 30. And that way, when it does change depths, when you say get in 15, then you see the same fish arches or whatever. So you know if they're big fish or little fish. Because when it starts changing, you know, on the unit from the auto depth mode, it's going to make the fish returns look bigger in cases when they're really not, if you kind of know what I'm talking about.
That's a good point. If it's automatically adjusting and you're showing a fish on the bottom in 30 feet of water, and then it adjusts and you get the same size fish on the bottom in 15 feet of water, if it's automatically adjusting, then a smaller fish will look bigger in shallower water. Correct. Right? Am I thinking about that right?
Well, that's exactly right. And it's, you know, if I'm putting it on 30, I'm really looking in 20 to 25 is what I'm doing. If you follow me.
Sure.
So you know, you're riding around, and so you get in 15, but if it's
all
on
all
auto,
of a sudden, all them fish start looking bigger, and you think, oh, I found the jackpot.
Well, that's right. Well, that's right. It's like it'll flip to 20. Most of them go from 10-foot increments. So when it flips to 20 and you're looking at 15, but he left it on 30, the fish would be relative because you've already looked at them at 30 foot. So, you know, there's so many variables, but my point is, you know, if I can touch it, I can fix it is what I do. So, and I know when I get through, I know that there's a benefit, you know, customer or client is happy because they're more familiar with you know, what they have. And I'll have them call me back too. You know, we get through that day, they'll call me back, and I tell them, you know, call me if you need help. I'd be glad to diagnose whatever question you have over the phone. You know, I'm just trying to help folks is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, that's definitely, I'd never thought about that before. I know when I first started using sonar down here, you know, the delta I'm on is super muddy and dirty, and especially, you know, in the winter when the flood levels come
shallow.
Up.
I mean, you're on a shallow lake or impoundment. Well, yeah. It's really not an impoundment, but it's the river, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm sure 20 foot is as max as you'd ever have it, and maybe 15 might be even better. I don't know. But if you had it on auto, you know, and it's reading at 20, and then when you get into shallow, well, then it's going to be, you know, I'm just making a point there. You know, sometimes you want it manually or leave it on auto. I'm not saying that auto is just bad. It's just that, you know, when you're comparing the size of the fish, and then, you know, if you know, I mean, because if you're putting it on down scan or maybe just regular traditional, and you see a big arch, well, that doesn't mean it's a big giant bass. It could be a gar, a big carp, or a catfish. And so if you leave it on one, you know, say 30 or 20, then everything you see, the returns you're getting are relative to what you've been seeing. So you kind of know what maybe type of fish it is. You know what I mean? That's just one thing that I'm saying. And then, of course, one of the easiest ones to decipher is your striped bass, you know, your hybrids and striped bass, because they'll always be in a school. Very rarely do you see them, you know, off by themselves. And when you see how they set up on your screen, you can pretty much tell what brand fish that is for sure. And it's amazing. If you just have it on traditional, the stripe or hybrids, and you'll see them shoot up to the top in the water column. And it's just like, you know that they're actively moving and feeding. And sure enough, you'll see the bait ball, you know, if you go the schools and everything, there's going to be bait somewhere because they're just not going to hang out, you know, where there's no food. And I'll tell you another thing that gets overlooked this time of year is your birds show up. You get your loons showing up. You got your seagulls coming up. I mean, we're over there at Martin, and we see the loons. I mean, loons will tell you where the bait is. Now, and you follow, you got the seagulls will come up. Plus, you got loons, and plus, you got the cormorants. So, I mean, the birds this time of year can tell you a story also. I mean, anybody that's not watching what the birds are doing, you know, they're making a mistake.
For sure. I know the guys down here on Mobile Bay, a lot of your inshore guys, that's something that they pay really, really close attention to, is where you got those shorebirds diving. And we get a bunch of them, even up here on the river, we get a bunch of gulls and terns and birds like that working. And then I like fishing the shallows a lot. So sometimes them shorebirds will tell you some information when you get them early spring bluegill fishing. You got fish up on beds, sometimes you'll get them herons up in there stalking them bluegill beds too. So that's some good tips. I'd have never really thought about it. Simple, soon as you said it, it made sense, but I'd have never really thought about the auto depth scroll fooling you when it came to fish size. So that's a real good tip. I feel like people would benefit from having somebody who thinks about all that stuff out there in their boat looking at their setups. If folks are interested in that, if they want to book a trip with you, or if they want to get with you on setting up a sonar system, where's a good place to look you up?
You know, I'm on grozzlesguideservice.com. I've got my internet site. Of course, I'm on Facebook also, and they can call me at 706-593-4192. And so I'm up to getting in your boat, you know, and no matter what kind of electronics you have, I can help you. I don't care if it's all three major brands, because I know all three of them. I've had them all, and they're all good, good units. It's just that they need to be set up properly to really benefit the, you know, fishermen.
Absolutely. No, that makes perfect sense. Well, Groz, as always, I appreciate you being on the show, and be safe out there. Stay warm with the winter coming up.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by Bucks Island. Is a family-owned and operated business since 1948. They have new pontoon boats, bass boats, bow riders, and aluminum boats for sale. They love trade-ins for boats and motors. They can rig your boat or ship your new motor anywhere in the United States. They provide boat service on all kinds of boats, even if they weren't purchased from Bucks. They have factory-trained and certified technicians. Visit them at 4500 Highway 77, Southside, Alabama, 35907 zip code, or give them a call at 256-442-2588. All righty, folks, welcome back. This time we're here with Melissa from Bucks Island, and we're here to talk today about aluminum bass boats. And I know, you know, you got to love a fiberglass boat, glitter boats, but I can say, as somebody who's owned an aluminum boat, I do like that I don't have to do the maintenance on my boat that you have to do on fiberglass. So if you're in the market, I personally would recommend that you check out an aluminum boat. Melissa, what's your thoughts on it? Aluminum versus
Hey,
fiberglass?
Nick. I appreciate you having me on. Yes, absolutely. Now, you're kind of in my forte. I'm the same way. I used to own a fiberglass boat, but I kind of changed gears, and over the years, I've had several aluminum boats, and they're just fantastic. To me, number one, probably the biggest factor is, cost factor. They don't cost near as much, and you can still get from point A to point B, and they are really coming along in design and innovation in these aluminum boats. And there's so many different styles. You've got your bass style, your crappie style, center console, bays, and they're amazing. And they're just versatile. They're very versatile. You can go across big water, get in the back of creek channels, and depending on how that boat's laid out and designed, carry up to four, six. I've even seen some up to eight people, depending on the size range, of that boat. But you hit the nail on the head as far as maintenance. It's virtually maintenance free. I mean, you'll take that thing and fish around docks and places you might not want to carry that fiberglass boat that costs so much.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. I always joke with people, aluminum, it doesn't really rust. I mean, it oxidizes, but it does it a little bit, and then that's just kind of it. And even if you scratch through the paint, like, it's just not that big of a deal. You scratch through a gel coat, that's a whole different story.
Exactly, and that's what we see. Customers will come in, and pocketbook won't quite let them go to, a fiberglass boat. But with all these various aluminum boats now, customers are realizing, hey, I can get in. Even they've changed these designs now, and a lot of them, are wood free, and they've reinforced the transoms, and they can carry more horsepower. So what I'm saying is, even the guys that are all about the tournament fishing and all, they're going towards these high performance aluminum boats that have these pad design hulls and larger horsepower motors, and love the way they ride and handle, and don't worry about that boat as much as they would a fiberglass boat.
Sure. So I know that, like, conventional wisdom, like historically, if you talk with people who were really serious about it, they would tell you that, yeah, an aluminum boat's fine if you're just looking for a small boat, but they would say that you would never really get as good of a ride and get the top end speeds out of one as you would out of a fiberglass boat. Do fiberglass boats still hold an edge there, or have aluminum boats? It sounds like, from what you're saying, aluminum boats have kind of caught up with them.
They've come a long way, Nick. But yes, I mean, fiberglass is definitely heavier. You're not going to get blown around with the wind and the wake as much in fiberglass as you do aluminum. But I'm going to tell you, they've come a long way. And, there are some boats out there that if we blindfolded you and did you a test ride, you would like the way it rode. Definitely.
Yeah, so you're saying there would still be a little bit of advantage if you got people maybe on big reservoirs, need a bigger boat. That's the folks who'd want to jump up to a fiberglass boat.
That is correct. That is correct. Or if you wanted to stay with aluminum, these center console bay boats have just become amazing. They're people are realizing it's not just for the Gulf or the coast anymore. They're using them around here. We're seeing them more and more on the lakes and rivers. Families are liking them because you can carry more people in them, and you can move around a lot easier in that boat than a standard traditional crappie or bass style boat. So the center consoles are really come on in the last several years.
Yeah, I know the center pop consoles are popular, and down here, at least where I'm at, something that I've looked at and liked and rode in a few of them is those stick steers. The crappie guys down here
Yes.
really love a stick steer because they can sit there and motor to where they want to be, and then they don't have to get up. You just drop the trolling
That's
motor.
exactly right. I was going to say anything like that. The stick steers is definitely a following. The guys that want that particular boat knows that they can sit down and not have to get up on decks, and it just makes it more stable for that person that doesn't want to climb up and down on decks and stuff like that. You got everything right there at hand's reach usually.
Yeah, they've definitely got a lot of different. They've come a long way from just your standard old aluminum John boat. Like, I've seen some really nice professional looking polished boats with everything you'd expect to see, right? Rod lockers, storage in the front and rear decks. Like they look nice now.
That is correct. And even the paint processes, I've had people come up and say, oh my gosh, is that aluminum or fiberglass? And these paint processes they've come out with that actually has flake in it that's on the aluminum boat's amazing.
Yeah, I've seen that too. I've seen them in at a distance, at 20 yards it would pass for a fiberglass boat for sure. What about with your horsepower ratings? Do you like can you get as big of a motor? Like I know usually I've seen aluminum bass boats and it seems like they pair them with a bit smaller motor.
They do, and generally that is the case. Most of the time, they're going to be your smaller horsepower motors, and it's going to be for your weekend fisherman, the guy that don't really do tournaments and stuff like that. Or even the guys that do tournaments. A lot of times I've sold these aluminum boats for their backup boat or their pre-fishing boat, and they like it because they can go places they're not going to take that fiberglass boat just to see if the fish are in there before they make a move with that fiberglass boat. So it has its advantages and disadvantages. But some of the boat manufacturers have come out with, a little bit larger horsepower engines, but not as great as the ones that are on the fiberglass for sure.
Yeah, I imagine too, there's a pretty big difference in weight when it comes time to tow one.
Yes, there's that's one of the advantages and disadvantages is it's a lighter weight boat, and it's going to tow much easier with not so big of a truck. You don't have to have a 2500 HD or something like that. And these guys, like that. The ease and versatility of it being, something smaller on a single axle trailer, these guys getting it in and out of limited space garages, they like that. They can push it around, move it around, and they can load and unload it themselves. You start getting in that heavier weight classification, then it's little more cumbersome for doing that.
I've definitely seen that. I have seen diehard anglers, as they start to get a little bit older, they retire and then they just realize they're like, man, I'm not taking other, like I'm retired. So I got more time where I fish by myself. My friends are still working. So it's just me. And I know guys who have the big boat, and then they got the little boat that's their favorite because they're like, yeah, that's just me and maybe the dog, and I can load it, unload it, back it up. It's just not a production, I can just throw it in the water and go. It's got everything I need.
That is exactly right. That is exactly right. Like I said, it has its advantages and disadvantages. You might have, maybe a smaller live well or something like that, but for the most part, they've really come a long way. They've widened the beams on a lot of these makes and models, and you're getting more stability, and you can put, the same electronics and trolling motor stuff that you would have on that fiberglass boat on that aluminum boat, and get out there and enjoy catching just as many fish, in my opinion.
Well, I know we've talked a few times about the aluminum boats being a little smaller, a little cheaper, a little bit, less of a motor. You don't need as big of a pickup truck to tow them, kind of more of the budget everyman's bass boat. I know a lot of people, they'll save a little bit of money instead of buying one new, try to pick up a used one. What's your best advice if you're looking to pick up a used one, save a little bit of money? What do you usually look for? Make sure that you're not ending up with a lemon.
Well, you just look at those aesthetics, condition of the engine. A lot of times check that skeg. But the skeg is designed. I have a lot of people, there might be a scratch on the skeg or something like that. Oh, that guy hit that or tore that up. Not necessarily. That skeg's doing its job. That's what it's there for. It's designed to protect that foot. And mainly just let those technicians or that dealer that you're going to check out a used boat. They're gonna be able to tell you compression, gear case check, that kind of stuff. Whether it needed a seal in the foot from some wraparound fishing line, all that's generally been inspected by a good dealer that is gonna go through those pre-delivery inspections, and that's gonna help that customer know. Also, a big thing is hours on the engine. That's going to be a big factor as to, how long that motor's been ran and whether it's gone through proper servicing or, how much idle speed it's ran or wide open throttle it's ran. So a lot of that's going to determine condition of that boat. And generally, you can see that wear and tear factor, you know, at first glance, but you don't always know the hours or everything about that engine that a technician can tell you.
I think that's good advice. So go ahead and take it. If you're not buying from a dealer, take it to a dealer and get them to check it out, basically.
That is correct.
There we go. Well, Melissa, it's always a pleasure. If folks want to, folks are shopping, maybe looking to pick up that family bass boat, where's a good place to get in touch with you?
They can reach out here at bucksisland.com. You can find us on the web or Facebook, or you can give us a call at our 1-800 number, 1-800-I'm-ready, and ask for our sales team, and anybody here would be happy to help you.
There we go, guys. Y'all check them out if you're in the market. And Melissa, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Nick.
And we're going to take a quick break. Y'all take a minute to check out some of the businesses that keep this show free for you. This week's episode has been brought to you by... Did you know every 40 seconds someone has a heart attack or stroke? In that moment, every second counts and every critical decision matters. Air Medcare Network's air ambulance providers can bring life-saving care directly to those in need at a moment's notice. With 320 locations across 38 states, Air Medcare is the largest air ambulance network. Rest assured, they've got you and your entire household covered. Membership is just $99 a year, or just $79 for seniors. Visit gdo.com/airmedcare to enroll. All right, folks, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts. And again, don't forget to text that code ALFFR to 779-345-2918. Again, just text ALFFR, it's Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report, to 779-345-2918. Subscribe to our email list and we'll send you the promo code via email. This week's episode of the Alabama Freshwater Fishing Report has been brought to you by Fish Bites. Whether you're hitting the sand with set rig or fishing the flats and marshes for speckled trout, redfish, and flounder, Fish Bites has something for you. Check out the full line of scented saltwater and freshwater baits at fishbites.com. Also brought to you by Killer Dock combines durability, function, and design to uniquely upgrade your entire dock experience. Visit killerdock.com to see more. Also brought to you by Southeastern Pond Management. Since 1989, Southeastern Pond Management has been a leader in pond and lake management services. Schedule an obligation-free consultation today. Call 1-888-830-POND or info@sepond.com. Also brought to you by L&M Marine. L&M Marine has something for everyone, from small hunting boats to pontoons to bigger bay and hybrid boats for the hardcore angler. You can visit them at 34600 Highway 59 in Stapleton, Alabama, or give them a call at 251-937-1380.